You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han, and today is Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. We're coming off of a one-day break for the 4th of July holiday, but we have some news to talk about, actually. The Clippers, Monday night, reportedly were closing in on a sign-and-trade deal for Danilo Gallinari. The deal was finally agreed to by all parties on Tuesday, and when the moratorium ends, he will, in all likelihood, be the Clippers' biggest addition of the summer. Obviously, Blake Griffin's contract is worth more money, and Blake Griffin is a more important player, but Gallinari might be the most important newcomer, right up there with Patrick Beverley, who the Clippers got back in the Chris Paul trade. But so what I kind of want to do in today's episode, not going to be a crazy one like we've had in the last week or so that go like an hour plus long, but we'll just basically talk Clippers news, league news, and then a little bit of healthy speculation going into the fifth day of NBA free agency. So first things first, this trade for Danilo Gallinari. The Clippers are going to send the Atlanta Hawks, Jamal Crawford, Diamond Stone, and Houston's 2018 first-round pick. The Atlanta Hawks are going to send a second-round pick to Denver, and Denver is going to sign and trade Danilo Gallinari to a three-year, $65 million contract to the Clippers. That means the Clippers are getting a very heavily paid Gallinari, and basically the only thing of super, you know, of notable value that they had to give up was that first round pick from Houston, which, again, while it has value, isn't a crazy price to pay. That pick is likely going to be 28th overall, or at least 25 or later, and the Clippers have their own 2018 first round pick. So they would have had two first round picks in the same draft, which is really nice. It's nice to have two first round picks. It's not like that one is a throwaway. But because they had a second one, it's a little easier to part with it knowing that you'll still be able to get a rookie. And that's it. What was able to help them bring in Danilo Gallinari, who's the best Clippers small forward in, you know, I really don't know how long it's since. It's been a long time since they had someone of his caliber at the small forward position. Now, as far as the players that they gave up, because I know I said that the pick was the only thing of value, and in terms of trade value, that's probably true. Diamond Stone, second round pick who didn't really play in his rookie season, sure, he, you know, maybe Atlanta might keep him and see if he's any good, but it's not like anyone is really dying to get Diamond Stone on their team. And Jamal Crawford is a 37-year-old declining shooting guard with, you know, frankly, a contract that's not very desirable, which is why the Clippers had to include a first-round pick so that Atlanta would be willing to take on Jamal Crawford's money, and they're likely to buy him out of his contract anyway. So in terms of trade value, the only thing that really matters is that pick. But in some other type of value where we judge things based on more than what they demand on the open market, it's kind of, it's really strange to have Jamal Crawford not on the Clippers anymore. After 5 years of being such a constant presence, and it felt like at times really that he, you know, this is weird to say, but I was thinking that it might be stranger to watch the Clippers without Jamal Crawford than to watch them without Chris Paul. I don't know exactly why that is, but I just feel like maybe it's because Chris Paul missed a lot of games. I think he missed more games than Jamal during his time with the Clippers, but Jamal always just felt like such a constant. You know, he was with the Clippers for 5 years, and ever since that first trade deadline, he's been involved in pretty much every single trade rumor. Every single deadline, it's Jamal and something for a small forward, right? Every single draft, Jamal for, and the draft pick for a player. Every single summer, if the Clippers need to clear salary, Jamal Crawford is the guy going out, right? He was that piece, probably because he was the sixth man, who always seemed the right combination of valuable and expendable. Like, he has this decent-sized contract. We can get a return for him. At the same time, we're willing to part with him. Because you could have gotten a return for DeAndre Jordan at any point in the last 5 years, but the Clippers didn't really want to move him. Crawford, it felt like, while they weren't actively trying to get rid of him, they were always ready to deal him if the price was right. And while that's the brutal reality of the business, and I certainly don't regret that the Clippers made this deal, I think it is a little unfortunate for a guy like Jamal Crawford, who really gave himself to the organization. Just a week ago, he was at the meeting with Blake Griffin convincing him to resign, and he gave a quote to the LA Times about how big it was for the team and the organization to be getting Blake back. So I'm sure that he feels underappreciated. And, you know, I don't have a ton of sympathy for him maybe not liking what fans tweet about him during games or whatever, because that's, you know, I feel like that's almost a little childish. But when it comes to this real-life ramification of being traded to a different team across the country by, you know, traded away from an organization that he's given so much to, not just in terms of time, but in terms of leadership and, you know, really, people talk about Chris Paul, Jamal Crawford, J.J. Redick, three veteran leaders leaving the Clippers. I think Jamal had a far bigger mentorship role, a far bigger impact on the locker room culture than Paul or Redick, or at least more of a positive one. We know that Chris Paul was very demanding. Jamal, by all accounts, took young players under his wing and was more of a mentor and leader and amazing chemistry guy. It seems like we heard at every turn of the Chris Paul era, Chris Paul isn't getting along with so-and-so, right? We never heard in 5 years a word about Jamal Crawford not getting along with someone. In fact, we heard at several junctures that Jamal Crawford was the one mentoring someone, doing positive work in the locker room. Austin Rivers, after his big playoff game against the Portland Trailblazers, came out in that press conference and basically said that Jamal Crawford was the one guy who believed in him and told him, you know, Austin was hearing so much about how you're only in the league because of your dad, blah, blah, blah. You're a bust. You're a wasted draft pick. And Jamal Crawford just kind of helped him learn to shut that out and play his game. And look at what Austin's become. And if that, you know, if there's merit to that and it came straight from Austin's mouth, then I think Austin would probably agree that the Clippers wouldn't have the starting shooting guard that they have today in Austin Rivers were it not for Jamal Crawford. So I don't want to get too much into that, and we will talk more later in the summer during like that August-September dead period about the era of Clippers that is gone, that's passed with Chris Paul and Jamal Crawford and all those guys. But right now let's talk about the new guy, Danilo Gallinari. So Gallinari, you know, I'm excited. I am. I think the deal is you know, I would grade it at like a C, probably. But I think that Gallinari himself is a very wonderful, exciting basketball player. So am I excited to see him take the court for the Clippers? Yes. Do I think it was necessarily a splendid front office move? Not so much. I don't think it's bad, but it's at best, you know, I'm indifferent. So the good thing, like I said, is that he's awesome. He's incredibly good at basketball, 6'10", amazing shooter, can play both forward positions, scored 18 points a game last year, all around great stuff. He's a good locker room guy. He, you know, everyone talks about him having this sense of humor. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And when you look at what's going to be fun to watch, because I've talked about how this Clippers team is basically no longer a championship contender, at least for the time being. Maybe in a couple years as they keep building around Blake Griffin, they can get back into that territory. But for now, why not have some fun? Why not play with some different lineups? Why not give some young guys some chances? Now, you don't want to go full tank mode and be playing Juwan Evans 30 minutes a game because you're still trying to make the playoffs and win a playoff series potentially. But I don't think you need to be so worried about winning 52 games instead of 50 games this year, which is really what the case was in the last few years with Chris Paul. So getting a guy like Gallinari is going to be fun. I think he's going to be fun to watch as a Clipper, so I'm looking forward to that. But one of the problems, one of his shortcomings, is defensively. Now, earlier in his career, he was a fine defender, but as a result of all the injuries that he's racked up, he's really slowed down on that end, and his combination of size and length at 6'10", and smarts get him so far, but overall the step that he's lost, and he was never particularly quick to begin with, really limits him as a defender, especially on the wings. And when you look at the fact that the Clippers have a small shooting guard and a big power forward, neither of whom are really suitable to guard the Kevin Durants and LeBron Jameses of the league, that's going to be a little sketchy. But like I said, this year you don't have to think, well, who's going to guard Durant in the Western Conference Finals? That's not what you're thinking when you're building the team. So I think you can live with it. Speaking of the step he's lost to injuries, I think that is the biggest drawback. The fact that while I think he's going to be greatly exciting to watch, we might only watch him for 50 games this year. He's averaged 50... He's in the last six seasons, he's averaged 48 games played. He's only played 70 or more games twice in his career. Now, to put that in perspective, Blake Griffin, the first four seasons of... Well, obviously he missed his rookie season with that knee surgery. But his... The season that counted as his rookie season, in which he won Rookie of the Year, through his fourth season, he played all but four games in 4 years. And then he started having some injury problems in the last couple years. Gallinari never had that strong stretch at the start of his career. He had one good year where I think he played 80 or 81 games. Other than that, it's been a lot of missed time in every single season. It's almost, you know, we used to say you could pencil in Chris Paul to miss 10 games. So you say, well, we're going to need a starter for 10 to 20 games at point guard. You can pencil in Gallinari to miss 20, 25 games every year. Hands down. It's a drawback. And I think that that's one thing the Clippers have to think about as they continue building this team. Do you want to start Sam Decker at small forward for 20 or 25 games? Or does Doc Rivers decide not to start Decker and start Austin Rivers at small forward and then Lou Williams, and now you've got 6'1", 6'1", 6'4", on the perimeter? So I think the Clippers need another capable small forward player, maybe a 2/3, to kind of help them out in those situations, because I don't think Decker should be starting 25, 30 games potentially, and I don't think you want to go small with Austin Rivers for that much time. Now, what I do like, and this kind of goes hand in hand with the it's going to be fun thing, the Clippers are staying relevant. And while this might seem, you know, I know someone is going to say, this is a loser's mentality. If you're not winning the championship, you're not doing anything. You're wasting your time. Well, I got to watch 82 games next year. And I'm going to have a hell of a lot more fun if the Clippers win 50 of them than if the Clippers win 20 of them. So that's what I think. I'm glad they're staying relevant. I'm glad they're going to be competing for a playoff spot. I'm glad that they're, you know, look at where the Clippers were for decades. I'm not saying that you should be satisfied with 50 wins every year and never competing for a championship, but I am saying that if the in-between periods you're winning 46, 48 games and making the playoffs, it's much better for building your respectability as an organization and for building your culture than if you go straight back into the gutter the moment that Chris Paul leaves. And I think that Steve Ballmer knows that. That this is the time to prove that you're not going to go back to the old Clippers. That the change may have come at the same time as Chris Paul came, but it was not only directly because of Chris Paul, and now that he's gone, you're going to go back to losing. Now, what I'm going to do is shift gears a little bit to free agency around the league. There's been a few, you know, last episode I did this big rundown of all the deals from over the weekend. There hasn't been a ton more, but we'll go over it, and then that will kind of transition us into the hypothetical what's next period of this podcast. So, starting with Monday's news, July 3rd, Darren Collison signed a two-year, $20 million deal to go to the Indiana Pacers. This is a guy that the Clippers were targeting. They were looking at him for their mid-level exception to be the backup point guard, but ultimately, $20 million and a starting job is a little bit more money, and it's a better role, so it makes sense that the Pacers were able to get him. But I think that you can't look at it as, oh man, Darren Collison was our target, and we missed out. I think you have to look at it as a handful of players in that of that level. C.J. Miles, is Rudy Gay are among the players still left on the market. All of them are hypothetically capable of getting $10 to $12 million a year and a starting job somewhere. What the Clippers have to do is, as the market plays out, see if one of them, at least one of them, slips through the cracks and falls into your lap at the mid-level exception. If it's a guy like C.J. Miles, I think it could be hugely valuable for the Clippers. But we'll see what happens. I felt like last summer, the worst contract the Clippers gave out, and people heavily criticized the Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford deals. I feel like the worst contract they gave out was Wesley Johnson, because they had to keep Rivers and Crawford. They had their bird rights. They couldn't have spent that money on anyone but those two guys. All they would have been able to do was replace them with minimum salary players. But Wesley Johnson, they didn't have bird rights on. They had to use their mid-level exception on him. And I felt like if they'd been a little more patient, they could have tried to do something a little more impactful with the mid-level exception than keep Wesley Johnson. And Wesley Johnson, as it proved out, was horrible in his first year and now is looking like basically dead money for the next two seasons. Moving forward, the Kings made a couple of veteran signings. George Hill, 3 years, $57 million. Zach Randolph, 2 years, $24 million. I like both of these deals for the Kings. You know, the Kings are going full rebuild. They have all these young players. Almost their entire rotation is going to be young players on rookie deals. But I like these two signings, and I think that it's important to sign some vets. Now, you don't want to be taking away from your young players. You don't want a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein to be racking up time in the D-League while a guy like Zach Randolph is playing on the Kings. But I also think that in order to give your players the best possible environment to develop, you need to give them a sturdy playing environment. And so that's why I think it's important, for example, for the Sixers to sign J.J. Redick, because they have some young athletic playmakers who are going to make mistakes, and the Sixers will live and die by those mistakes. And this season they will die a lot on Ben Simmons turnovers, Markel Fultz turnovers, plays like that. But the game will be easier and the progress will be greater because they have an elite shooter like J.J. Redick, so that when they make the right play, the defense isn't too collapsed around them. I think that having a guy like George Hill is going to be big for the Kings, because what's the point of having a team full of prospects if you don't have a steady point guard who can dribble the ball up and initiate an offense? Now, it's a lot of money to pay for that, but George Hill brings you a guy who's going to be a really solid individual and team defender. He's going to bring the ball up and get you into your offense, and he's going to provide that environment for all the prospects to learn. Zach Randolph does a similar thing, but at the power forward position. He's a reliable guy for you to throw the ball into the post, and he'll score or demand double teams. And that allows the young players to develop in a system beyond, okay, everyone gets 10 isolation chances this game. And then the big signing, really, you know, there's a couple minor moves, but the big signing was Gordon Hayward to the Celtics on a four-year, $128 million deal. So this is what it would have looked like, basically what the deal would have looked like if Blake Griffin had left the Clippers. 4 years, $128 million. Now, what's interesting is that in order for the Celtics to give Hayward this max contract, they're actually going to need to move some salary. Now they've got some pieces around the edge that around the edges that they can move. They already renounced Kelly Olynyk, his qualifying offer, which did a chunk of the work to get them with Max to get them to the Max cap room so that they can give Gordon Hayward his $29.7 million. But the rest of their around the edges pieces don't get them where they need to go. Cutting Jordan Mickey, cutting Demetrius Jackson, both on non-guaranteed deals, doesn't get you there. Convincing their two young international prospects to go be stashed in Europe for a year so that their cap holds go away still won't get them there. And by most accounts, Ante Zizic is going to stay, which means that's another $1.5 million extra on the books. Even if Guershon Yabusele goes back overseas, it won't be enough. And then the infamous Terry Rozier, who Danny Ainge has been unwilling to include in trades for superstars, even his $1.8 million salary won't quite get them there. The only way for the Celtics to get to maximum salary room is to move one of their bigger contracts, one of their core pieces. Now, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are safe. Two top three draft picks from the last two drafts, both Danny Ainge's prize future stars. They're not going anywhere in a salary dump. Isaiah Thomas is Boston's leading scorer. He's not really expendable. Al Horford is their only NBA-proven big man on the roster right now. He's not especially expendable, and his contract, I think, would be very hard to move. That leaves the three wings. Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, all making middling salaries from $5 to $8 million or so. All would allow the Celtics to sign Gordon Hayward, and maybe it's, you know, it works out pretty well for the Celtics because of the way these guys can, some of them play multiple positions, including Hayward, who can play shooting guard and small forward. Whichever one of them they move, Hayward can just slide in and take those minutes, and it's almost like a natural fit. You know, Bradley, Crowder, and Smart all averaged more than 30 minutes a game last season. Hayward's obviously going to play a ton of minutes and start pretty much every game. So whoever you trade, if you trade Avery Bradley, who's the starting shooting guard, Hayward comes in, starts at shooting guard, plays Bradley's minutes. If you trade Jay Crowder, who's the starting small forward, Hayward comes in, starts at small forward, plays Crowder's minutes. If you trade Marcus Smart, who is kind of a Swiss Army knife backup who plays some point guard, some shooting guard, some small forward, then likely you would bump Avery Bradley to the bench or Jay Crowder over to power forward, and there you go. But the fact that all three of them are so movable doesn't really help Boston determine which one they should be moving. Smart is the worst of the three, frankly. He's the worst of the three players. But he's 23 years old. He has the most upside, and he's going to be a restricted free agent next summer, which gives the Celtics long-term control to retain him. Avery Bradley's 26. Jay Crowder is going to turn 27 tomorrow on July 6th. And Bradley's probably the best of the three, but like I said, with Smart, the Celtics have restricted free agency for long-term control. With Crowder, the Celtics have him on probably the most team-friendly contract in the league that has three seasons left on it at an incredibly low rate, to around $7 million a year. Avery Bradley is going to be an unrestricted free agent next summer, which means, first of all, if he's lost his starting job to Gordon Hayward, he's probably going to leave the Celtics, and they'll be left with nothing for him, and they'll have traded one of their other pieces that they control. Number two, he's going to demand a lot of money, so even if he wants to stay with Boston, they're going to have to really pony up maybe $16 million a year, $18 million a year to keep him. So I think that for that reason, Bradley's the most likely to be traded, but I think that it makes sense for the Celtics to listen to offers to all three. Because depending on what the market is, they might be able to get something better for Crowder, and then they play Hayward at three, they re-sign Bradley, and they're happy with it. So they'll listen to offers for all three, but I just have this hunch that Bradley is the most likely to be moved. As far as the Clippers come into play, they do have the tools to get in on this sweepstakes of Celtics, but it's not particularly likely, because I think there are plenty of teams out there that have the cap space to absorb these players, one of these players, and have, frankly, more need for them than the Clippers do, and would be willing to give more up for them than the Clippers are, or at least have more in terms of future, you know, extra future second round picks and all that stuff to give up. But the Clippers theoretically can make it work. The trade exception that they got in the Chris Paul trade, worth $7.3 million, can fit Crowder or Smart. Crowder pretty snugly, Smart with actually a little bit of room to spare. So they can absorb those salaries for nothing. But then you have to pay Boston. And you don't pay with cash, because Boston doesn't care about cash. You have to give them something that has basketball value. And things that have basketball value that don't have cap holds are future draft picks. Now, the Clippers can't trade their own 2018 first-round pick. Thankfully, they have saved themselves from that fate, because Doc Rivers already traded the 2019 first-round draft pick. Lottery protected. And the Boston Celtics currently own it. So, how do you trade with a team when all they're asking for is draft assets, and they already own the first future first that you're able to trade? Now, they could try to remove the protections from the pick. It's currently lottery protected, and it would roll over into a second rounder. So, if the Clippers stink, the Celtics would only get a second rounder. In this case, if the Clippers stink, the Celtics could potentially get a very valuable pick. But that's a high risk for the Clippers, because they'd be trading what could be a top five, top three pick for a role player. All of these three guys are good, but they're all role players. And it's also a risky move for the Celtics, because the Clippers should be a playoff team in the next couple of years with this team they've put together. And if they add a guy like Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder, they should definitely be a playoff team. And so then the Celtics would be basically getting nothing back, because they already own the pick in 2019 if it falls between 15 and 30. So if the pick falls between 15 and 30, having made a trade to also own 1 through 14 will do the Celtics no good. Maybe they give up some future seconds. Maybe they talk about another future first-round pick down the line. But it just seems like in the Clippers' cupboard, you know, you always hear, oh, the cupboard is bare. Well, it's not really bare. They have pretty much all of their own stuff, except the one pick that's going to end up in Boston, whether it is a first-round pick or a second-round pick in the future. But they own most of their own stuff. They also own Cleveland's 2020 second-round pick. But some of these teams, especially if they are motivated to add one of these players because they think they're trying to win in the next couple of years, or even a team that's really down but looks at a 26-year-old like Avery Bradley and thinks this guy could be a core piece for us, they'd be willing to give up more than the Clippers have in their cupboard. Now, speaking of Avery Bradley, he's the one guy who doesn't fit in the Clippers trade exception. He makes $8.8 million. Like I said, the trade exception is only worth $7.3. But there's still a way for the Clippers to potentially swing a deal for Bradley. They could offer Lou Williams, who has a $7 million expiring contract, and he would be expendable to the Clippers anyway, because if you're bringing in Avery Bradley, who's a shooting guard, likely bumping Austin Rivers to the bench. Austin Rivers becomes the backup shooting guard. Lou Williams, who was the backup shooting guard, is now really left without a role. So, might as well trade him back to Boston anyway. Boston, for their part, instead of just getting a second-round pick, they get a role player. And I talked about how the Celtics are going to have to, like, move all these pieces around the edge, and they're not going to have a lot of depth around this new Gordon Hayward team. They really aren't going to have a lot of depth. So if they have Lou Williams, that helps them out a little bit. And Lou Williams is enough of a discount over Bradley that if the Clippers also take back a guy like Demetrius Jackson, who is... his contract is partially guaranteed for $650,000. So if the Celtics cut him, instead of owing him $1.5 million, they owe him $650,000. If they trade him and the Clippers cut him, the Celtics owe him zero, and the Clippers have that $650,000 on their cap sheet. So that's another way to sweeten the deal for the Celtics. And then the Celtics could potentially, at the deadline, flip Lou Williams' expiring deal for picks from another team. Potentially take on a bad contract with Lou Williams' expiring deal at the deadline and get compensated for it. Or they could keep Lou Williams as a backup role player on what is sure to be a very short bench next year, and his scoring could really end up helping them. I still don't think it's enough. I don't think that Lou Williams for Avery Bradley and Demetrius Jackson is enough, and I'm sure that the Celtics will get better offers than that, but this actually might be a little more enticing than Jay Crowder for the trade exception, because Jay Crowder for the trade exception, all you're getting are the Clippers' mediocre offerings in terms of draft assets, and you're losing the guy who I really think Danny Ainge wants to lose the least, because Crowder has such a team-friendly long-term deal. Marcus Smart, restricted free agent. I think Avery Bradley's the guy who they're most willing to part with because of his contract situation, and because Gordon Hayward is more of the most natural fit for Gordon Hayward is to start at shooting guard, replacing Bradley. And for Bradley, he makes enough money that the Clippers could offer a role player in Lou Williams, and the Celtics would still be able to clear the money that they need to clear. But I think the Clippers would probably still need to throw in a pick there. So I think that's a really interesting scenario, and even though there's a lot for Boston to explore, the clock is really ticking, because July 7th, everyone is putting pen to paper. That means that in the next 48 hours, all potential agreements, you're going to have to go get verbal agreements, and people are going to start scrambling. A lot of players who've been waiting around, waiting for offers, you know, a guy like Rudy Gay, who could have signed, you know, for $8 million somewhere long ago, has been waiting to see if Miami will give him a big contract after missing out on Gordon Hayward. These guys aren't going to wait much longer. Gordon Hayward was the last big domino to fall. I don't think there's going to be a lot more waiting around. So while the Celtics have a little bit of time, they can't wait indefinitely on this. I think we'll hear about a trade probably today, because tomorrow, the 6th, is the last day that the teams have in the moratorium to talk deals. Now, you can still sign someone on the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and on and on and on, but players like to have these agreements in place. So I think that the biggest, most active days will stop at the end of the moratorium, and the Celtics are going to need to know what's going on with their roster by the 5th so that they can use the 6th to talk to free agents about their room exception, about getting some minimum salary guys, and so forth. So that's going to wrap it up for today's episode. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk about any further Clipper news that we hear. Again, go over whatever signings we hear reports of tomorrow, and then maybe talk about some targets for the Clippers with their mid-level exception a little more in depth, assuming that the Clippers don't actually sign someone with a mid-level exception tomorrow. But so, thank you guys for listening. You can find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Hand. For any comments, questions, or feedback, you can email me, lhand.clipsnation@gmail.com. Follow all the Clippers news at clipsnation.com, the ClipsNation Twitter account at ClipsNationSBN. I'd like to encourage you guys to take a minute and go into iTunes and leave a good review for the show. If you do, and you mention in your review some free agent targets that you like, I will address them on the next episode. And if you are able and willing, please check out my Patreon page. Just go to patreon.com and search Locked On Clippers if you would like to support the show. That is all. Thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with a new episode. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.